Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech Magic, the podcast where we talk about innovation, technology, gaming, spatial computing, innovation, and everything in between. I am your host, Kathy Hackle, and I'm joined by my guest co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, what's going on?
Oh, so much. I don't know what you would call this show. It's not really like a news follow-up show, but it kind of does. We do that a lot where we go back and forth on like things that have happened in the tech industry and give like thoughts and opinions on it. This week's been bananas. Last week we talked about GDC and we talked about GTC and we kind of said, oh, we're going to have so much from GDC and GTC. And then just like the lawyers crawled out of the vents with like bills and new laws, and it's coming from every direction. This has been a wild week if anyone's been paying attention.
It's been intense. Yeah, I thought we were going to have a lot to talk about from GDC, but I'm like, that's old news. Like,
yeah,
so much happening. I feel so. Lots of things happening with laws and regulations and things that are getting passed in states, and we'll get into it. Lots of things happening in the AI space. It's almost like you're watching Survivor or Game of Thrones. So we'll get into it for sure. I do want to tell our audience I am feeling a little bit under the weather. So Lee's going to be doing a lot more talking this episode because I need him to help me with that. I think just the weird weather in DC just got to my vocal cords. So I'm making an effort here, y'all, to show up for y'all. But I want to start, maybe let's start with something that kind of broke this Monday. We're recording Monday. Episodes drop on Wednesdays. Something that's happening in Florida. Can you share with folks, like, because you shared it with me, you sent it to me earlier today. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it hit at, let's see, it came out at 12.
Yeah, it was around noon
PM.
Time, right?
Yeah, around noon Pacific time, right? So this is maybe like 3.5 hours old as the point of us recording this, but Florida Governor Ron DeSantis just signed a bill into play that will prohibit young children under the age of 14 from joining social media in the state. Mm-hmm. Those who are 14 or 15 will need parental consent before joining a platform. So this is a bill HB3.
First question to you is, how is this even enforceable?
That's a
How do you enforce this?
That's a great question. And this is something that we're going to be repeating for the entire episode for multiple stories from this week, because you and I have, we're on episode like 24 or something like that. Maybe 25.
So.
We're here, right? We've been doing this. And for all of those episodes, we've repeated like someone needs to start having the conversation about regulation, right? About a lot of these different things, whether it's AI or the like social media for children, things like that. Some regulation is needed. Obviously, it's just growing too quickly out of hand. The drawing issue is now states.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Are starting to pick up the momentum with different topics, and they're not the same topics in every state. So now we have this enforcement question, because we start acting like the internet is local and it's not a local thing. So I'm not entirely sure, and this is one of the big questions specifically for HB3 in Florida, is how this enforcement is going to happen. However, going through the articles, trying to piece the bill together, there are certain things that the bill immediate directs. So it tells social media that they have, that the companies have to delete existing accounts for those who are under 14. So if they,
are residents of Florida, I guess, like, that's... Like, how do you, because that's the thing. It's like, what if they're traveling out to the state? Like, what, like, I don't know. Like, it's confusing to me. Like, how do you even determine?
It's totally confusing, right? Like, this, I'm not entirely sure. Logic would dictate that it would be for those in the state. However, as a Florida native, I will confirm that logic is not our strongest feature. So I don't know. Companies that don't do this could be sued on behalf of the child.
On behalf of the child?
Yes, okay. Who creates the account, which would mean that the minor could be awarded up to $10,000 in damages. This is according to the bill. Companies found to be in violation of the law could also be liable up to $50,000 per violation, as well as attorney fees and court costs.
Gosh. Okay.
So this is really quite something. Now, here's the first thing. The internet's immediate reaction is this is a First Amendment issue, and they're going to bring that issue up.
Oh, they're going to go to the Supreme Court. I'm sure, possibly, maybe not.
Who knows?
Court. Who knows?
Have you,
we
I could mean,
go
knows
to the Supreme today? Court. Like, who knows? Right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
they choose whatever they want, but it's not really a First Amendment issue. And I know that doesn't.
Is it a two? Well, it's not even a 230 issue then. I don't know.
It's a service distribution issue. If I'm reading it correctly, right? Mm-hmm. They're not dissuading people from saying certain things. There's nothing brought in on like this is good language. This is bad language.
Is there anything in it about advertising to children? Like, is there a COPA?
No, it is a straight up. If you are under the age of 14, you do not have access to social media.
Okay.
Now, what I cannot figure out, and again, I've had all but 2 hours to really look into this, is what constitutes as social media.
That's another can of worms. Like,
right.
Know.
So like if it's Discord, there's a big problem because a lot of kids use Discord to play on Roblox. Is it Roblox? Is Roblox considered social media?
Oh, that's a LinkedIn post right there.
Right.
What is social media? Like,
To me,
like when I watch my kids play like in Roblox, even Minecraft, it's almost like a social, their version of a social network in some ways.
So I'm not entirely sure what constitutes a social media. And I'm not entirely sure that the people who wrote the law have thought that deeply into it, right? This is more of a reactionary of like the whole grilling that everyone from TikTok and Twitter or X and Meta had in front of the House a couple of months ago, right? Like this is all kind of coming to head from that. Now, it'll be challenged. Like this is not immediately going into law. NetChoice has already said that they'll challenge it. I don't actually agree with how they're challenging it, at least out the gate, because they're the ones who are kind of like hinting that this is a First Amendment issue that doesn't probably carry water. But if they can make the debate, like great, they can make the debate.
I can imagine the Metas of the world, like they're all going to challenge this. Like the lobbyists are heading straight to.
Yeah.
Yeah, do this. Yeah. I will say this, Lee, as a parent. I personally, and most people that listen to this, like I'm super strict with my kids and technology. Mm-hmm. My kids do not have social media. Like I do not allow them on social media. The first thing my daughter has gotten is Pinterest. That's it.
Well, how you're starting
on traditional social media.
Right. See, there we go. It's all the devil is in the details, right? And the argument can be made and won all the way to is email social media, right? Like, because we don't have a firm grasp on this wishy-washy term.
Yeah.
So It again, this is why it's got to go into litigation, because I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into this bill. I have not read all the way through it. I've been bombarded with articles and pulling as much as I can for this podcast. So like by the next one, I will have read the bill and we'll take a different look at it if anything jumps out. But as it stands right now, there are quite a few questions. And it will be interesting on, again, the enforcement of it, right? Because now, is this a scenario where you have to show a government ID?
Oh, that would be complicated in a second.
Right.
What if you're visiting? Like, because, you know, for example, I'll give you two things. I'll say two things here. I say one thing. I do believe social media should be age gated. I definitely agree on that. How you do that, that's a whole other thing, right?
Sure.
And then the other thing is, like, having traveled to countries like, you know, China, where once you're there, unless you have a VPN, like, you're not getting access to social. Like, it'll get blocked.
Right, right, right.
So does that mean that as soon as you fly into Florida airspace, you hit the ground in Florida, that things get, you know, blocked? Like, how do we even—
Logically, logically, yes, right? Because you would be connecting to an internet service provider. That IP address would shift to inside the state. Now, the only ways, and we're getting in a nitty gritty where, like, I don't honestly think anyone would like police this, but if you're standing like at the state line and your cell phone connects to a 5G tower in Alabama, like, okay, whatever, okay. Or Georgia, like, it's fine. You say it's not, I guess, wholly perfect, but yeah, you would be, as soon as you land in that state, your internet service provider would be within the state lines and they would be subject to the new laws. Now, what is interesting is the internet service providers are not bound to any of these laws, right? Like, it's not their responsibility. It's not even the person's responsibility who is setting up the account, which that surprised me, because that's going to get into what's going on in Tennessee in a little bit. It is solely on the not the internet service providers, but the actual, like, social media service provider, that provider, whether that's X, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Is Pinterest social media? Like, all of this starts getting
Snap,
to be kind
I
of,
mean, yeah.
Kind of
what
weird.
Is social? What isn't social?
So yeah, and that's as far as I've got. But there's a couple of things that stand out, and that is the awarding of up to $10,000. Like, from what I can tell, I feel like they're baiting, like, some type of class action lawsuit. And I'm just speaking off the top of my head. This is not legal advice. I'm not saying this is what's happening. Like, I'm just reading between the lines, taking some educated guesses here, because by them saying a minor could be awarded up to $10,000 on behalf of the company that whatever, like, makes that lawsuit, that makes it sound like a company can, like, pull together a group of illegal accounts and then use them to create a lawsuit. Like, a lawsuit, that sounds like a class action. Like, doesn't it? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
It could be. I mean, part of me, when I saw this, I said it's election year. Am I politically motivated? I mean, I think there's many, many ways that this could be interpreted. So why would you pass this law now?
I mean,
I don't want to necessarily go down the politics rabbit hole, but
even though we're talking about Florida, even though we're talking about Ron DeSantis, even though we're talking about a political year, I don't feel like this is super politically motivated as much as it's motivated by the whole panel hearing we saw with all the CEOs of social media a couple of months ago.
But that's DC. I think I'm jaded because I live in the DC area. And now, I'm always thinking, how does this play into politics and lobbyists and all these people?
I squeeze on my, like, my conspiracy theory hat and wanted to have that conversation, there is something to be said of, does this mean you have to have a legal ID to be inside of, so it's like, to utilize a social media platform? That could call out a massive population of people, not just people who are under the age of 14. And that's a problem. And to say that, oh, that would be super complicated, it's not as complicated as we say, because Roblox already has this mechanism in place if you want to have a 13 and up account, right? Yeah. They have age gated successfully their voice chat. So you cannot have voice chat if you're under the age of 13. But the way you do that is by providing a photograph of a legal ID.
Yeah.
So
you can get verified on LinkedIn, like, not right. Like, verified as in the check. I've got that, but it's more like verified that you're a real person than who you say who you are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're clear.
Even in, I think that's even the method that Facebook uses. If you like lose access to your account and you need to prove that you own that account, you have to send in your photo ID. So it's not entirely impossible. It goes in this direction. The problem that this creates, and this will be the repeated question we have, is it's one state. Mm-hmm. So does a single state passing a law that will be challenged force global companies, and these are global companies, mm-hmm. to enact a mechanism that is pretty intensive? Yeah. Like voter ID registration. Like it's right up there with that type of complexity, right? So at what point do the companies say, well, then I guess we just don't go have access in Florida?
Which leads us.
Good. If you would have said that to me last year, I'd be like, no one would do that. That's insane. Who would do that? But we've got that out of
No one's talking about it.
And no one's talking about it because no one wants to talk about Pornhub. No one wants to say the P word in public.
Adult entertainment. I prefer using the term adult entertainment to porn, but that's just me.
I didn't say that. I said Pornhub because that's the company. We have to talk about the company, right? So we're going to go from Roblox to Pornhub. And trust me, it makes sense. Naturally, it makes sense. Y'all wanted a crazy podcast? Here we go.
Here we go. Fasten your seatbelts, everyone.
So for those who aren't paying attention, or don't want to admit they're not paying attention.
I'm like literally blushing. I'm like, oh God, are we going to go down this road? Okay. But we're talking about the company.
We're talking about the company. Okay. And that's the thing is like, you kind of have to set the moral implications
Let's
of all
set
this
aside
to side.
For a second.
Yeah. Right. And this goes for like the ID for like having 13 and under, like you have to remove all of the emotion out of it, all of your moral opinions out of it, and just look at it as data, which is super difficult because this is all focusing around human decency at the end of the day. That's the debate, but we have to look at it by data. Those who are aware or paying attention, Texas passed a law that said that Pornhub needed to require an ID, a legal identification to be accessible within the state lines of Texas. So prior to this, if you were a Texas resident and you went to Pornhub.com and you could watch whatever content that they provided. However, what Texas passed in this law was you now go to that website and you have to provide proof of your age. I'm guessing it's 21 and up. And you do that by showing ID. This is not a mechanism that the website had built into it. They looked at the value of implementing that mechanism into their website for a single state and decided that it was not worth the investment. For whatever reason, this is within their own company's rights to do so, and said, we will simply just not be accessible within the state of Texas. I would have never thought mm-hmm. that was going to happen, but it did. And now other pornography providers are also following suit, and they're just basically saying, if this is what we have to, this is not something we want to implement. Now, whether they should implement that or not is not the conversation. The conversation is the fact that there is a internet provider, like service provider, not an ISP, sorry, that's very confusing, but like a content provider, a website that is refusing access to the state because the state is asking them to implement laws. That can happen. So we can take what we've seen already happen in Texas, copy, paste in Florida, on a much broader scale, right? In Texas, we're talking about a very specific content provider, right? One that does need some type of age verification behind mm-hmm. it, if that is your, you know, moral stance, which I think is right. But if you take that and you drop that theory, proven theory, onto the state of Florida, now you've got all of these social media companies that may be asking the same question this week.
And then the point is like, and you and I were talking about this before, it's like, it starts to become this patchwork of like, if every state is going to decide those sorts of things, like from a business perspective, I think it becomes really difficult for these companies to operate in general. Mm-hmm. From a consumer perspective as well, it's like, okay, if I cross the border, I have access to, you know, Pinterest, but I don't if I'm over here. And it starts to, the concept is a concept that I've heard of many times called splinternets, right? of multiple, like especially like between the U.S., between the East and the West, mm-hmm. right? The concept that there are multiple types of internets, right? China, U.S., that kind of example. But what if it starts being like a Texas, Florida, West Virginia, Virginia? Like that starts getting really complicated really fast.
It becomes nearly impossible to regulate or enforce, right? So a lot of these things, a lot of these concepts need to probably be approached from a federal level, right? Because if we can come up with an agreement for the United, let's focus on the U word, the United States, then we can have a united approach to how we think the internet should function as a society. As it currently stands, if each state is starting to define their own set of laws, asterisk, because some of these aren't really even like functionally laws. Like there's this enforcement question of like, but how do you, like, what are you going to do, right?
How do you enforce it? Who's in charge of enforcing it? Like, there's so many questions that it opens up, but it does, I think, in, to your point, it does open up a national conversation.
Right. And, right? And this
and
goes,
I this, think this, it this also is puts pressure. It puts pressure on DC, on Washington, Capitol Hill,
as it should,
to address 230, to address a lot of different things here, right? Maybe related, maybe not so, but yeah, I mean, I think the impact is.
Well, you have this question of like, if you look at Florida, you're saying, okay, they're going after social media. How do you define social media? And that seems super vague because it is.
Yeah.
But even if you were to take, you know, the stance and definition of pornography, how do you define pornography for the state of Texas? To which case, politics' best answer is, I don't know, but I know when I see it. Like, that was the question that was brought up.
Well, that's interesting. I'll push back on that because my friend Cindy Gallup, who's an amazing woman, she's the Michael Bay of business, and people can figure out why she calls herself that. I'm not gonna say, but she's actually raising funds right now for her company, which is called Make Love Not Porn, and it's more like it's a different type of content, right? It's not pornographic, like you mm-hmm. know, like what that means. So it's like, do you really recognize it when you see it? I think that brings up another question, maybe not a question you want to deal with in this podcast, but I think like, how does that affect someone like Cindy, who's trying to create something completely different that is more female led in some ways, that is looking more at sex tech? Like, I think that there's a whole other conversation there of how it could impact maybe some of the things that are being created that are not necessarily porn. But
anyway. And again, these are the gray areas that state laws seem to be able to easily glaze over and get past, whereas a federal law needs to actually have a little bit more of an implications to, like, how do you make this functional for everybody? So before we go to a break, we might as well just jump into Tennessee.
All right. Before we jump into Tennessee.
Okay.
I want to mention, because this is, I think, a line, because now we're going to jump into AI. Right?
Yes.
Into what's happening with AI regulation. So a few things that people might have noticed, and I think we mentioned it, the EU passing the AI Act that finally passed, not with as many teeth as we wanted to see, but still passed. That's great. You know, we've applauded Europe and being ahead of the game. Then you've got the UN.
I was going to say the UN General Assembly.
Yeah, yeah, UN General Assembly took up AI and has agreed on a landmark resolution mm-hmm. for AI. So those are bigger, right? Those are like the EU, the UN. Like, I would expect them to do these sorts of things.
Yes.
But now, looking at what's happening in Tennessee, and I shared this with you, and then you dug deep. Like, you went all into it. It's called the Elvis Act. So I'm going to let you talk about it because you're a lot closer to it than I am.
Yeah. So the Elvis Act, oh man.
What a good name.
It stands for the Ensuring Likeness, Voice, and Image Security Act. Whoever came up with this acronym, like, applause to you. That's incredible. To me, there is this deep-seated level of irony because Elvis is one of the most impersonated artists of all time. And so, like, to name an act that is saying you cannot digitally recreate somebody after Elvis is a little on the nose. But I like things that are easy to understand like that. And really, like, I'm not a big acronym fan, but good grief, the Elvis Act is
the Elvis Act.
It could only come out of Tennessee.
Out of Tennessee. And you've got to really, yeah. I mean, you spent time in Music City.
I mean, no, I lived in Nashville for 12 to 15 years. Actually know. I was there for most of my career. And so I'm Nashvillian through and through. I was there before ABC turned a show out of it and ruined it with all of the tourism. I was there before the bar cars and the bachelorette parties. And, there's this underlying idea that if you live through the 2010 flood, then like you get your Tennessee pass. So I lived there for a really long time, all that to say. And so that's what got my attention when I read this. So Governor Bill Lee signed in, the Elvis Act into law last Thursday to be exact. The whole idea behind this act is to ensure that, an artist's likeness, visually or sonically, voice creation, cannot be created out of AI and falsely attributed to them. Let me start by saying I fully am on board with what this law is trying to accomplish. But oh my goodness, this has got so many gaps in it that are not defined that it makes my head spin. This is a 3-page, like quadruple spaced bill. If I were to write it myself,
open up a Google Doc. Literally, that's how I feel.
It's so small, and it doesn't. Bills don't define how things are enforced. Yeah. I mean, I get that. Although, funny enough, the HB3 from Florida did actually throw some numbers of what fines could look like. I didn't expect to see that. Normally, bills don't go into enforcement that specifically. This one definitely doesn't, because that's what lawyers are for. Like, they take it to the court and then they go for damages. So it was weird to see that type of thing in HB3. But this is HB, let me see if I remember the number, 2091.
It's the Elvis Act.
It's the Elvis Act. And so really what it does a handful of things. It adds the term simulation to the concept of voice and image. So they are defining that a voice can be simulated and an image of a person can be simulated, and says that it infringes on their likeness and their rights if it is utilized to basically make content as if it were that person. Totally fine. No explanation on how to enforce this. No explanation of what this will actually do. There are people who make the argument of like, at least it's something to get the ball rolling, but it depends on what hill you're going to roll it down, because it could just smash into a town and you don't realize it's coming. Yeah. So this goes, I had no expectation to talk about Florida or what was going on over there until like 3 hours ago. So it's just wild that all this is coming together. Yeah. This is the exact same question that what Texas has brought up, where Pornhub is no longer available in Texas and other websites are starting to follow suit. There is a mechanism behind this Elvis Act that could lead to Spotify and SoundCloud or whatever other, music distribution platforms, YouTube for that matter, not being available in a state whose entertainment sector relies on it for its content. Like, there's a level of irony here that could come to, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying,
no, but that's a possibility.
It's a possibility
from that perspective. Definitely a possibility.
What the bill assumes is that they know who's making the infringement. The bill assumes this, and it's a wildly crazy assumption. It's not an amendment, but it reads like an amendment. And if you read the bill, you'll kind of walk away going, wait, so isn't this an amendment? But it's not, because it changes some terminology and it adds some teeth to the protection of it all. But it assumes that you actually know who the perpetrator is, who created the AI and is now profiting off of it. And that is an assumption that in 2024, you just can't make.
Yeah, it's a fallacy. No one really,
So if, let's say hypothetically, someone goes and makes a crazy Dolly Parton AI based song that had nothing to do with Dolly, they made a AI music video with Sora in a couple of years, and it's got an AI voice and AI generated lyrics. The whole thing's AI. You got AI Dolly. Mm-hmm. which I hope I don't see because I'm a big Dolly fan. That's why I'm utilizing this as an example.
You should have chosen someone else.
No, I'm using this to get people to understand and listen. We're talking about Dolly here.
Yeah, okay? She's a national treasure.
And they get this song to do something horrible, okay? Dolly Parton should be protected from that from happening. The way the bill reads is then, okay, there will be a legal action and the person who does this will be brought to, you know, terms about, you know, breaking this law. Even if you're out of state, that can still happen, right? If you're on the other side of the state line and you do this, they will find you and I guess give you a subpoena or whatever, you get a warrant and okay, that's fine. But what if you did it through a VPN, through a fake name on a fake account? That person cannot be found, right? Like that person is officially off the grid. There's tons of this crap all over the internet. There are tons of these fake accounts all over the internet. The majority of a lot of social media platforms are actually fake accounts. We're constantly seeing botting on systems like Reddit and so on and so forth. So this is a real thing. This content goes out for whatever reason. It is against the law in the state of Tennessee. Only the state of Tennessee can enforce this law because it's a Tennessee law, right? We're not talking about a federal issue here. This is a state issue. And they can't figure out who it is. So even if you were to, the state of Tennessee would have to require a warrant to be able to go to like YouTube and figure out who this person is, right? If it's through all of this. Even in doing so, you may not be able to figure out the final location of like who created this content.
Well, then you have to, you know, pull in Interpol, like at some, like if it's an, like,
you this still may never get there, right? Like you still just might not ever get there. So there is now this question of does the responsibility fall on the shoulders of the distributor of the content? That's not defined in any of this. That's the part that stood out to me is like the distributor is not specified as liable or not liable. The bill is so small. So is YouTube now responsible if they distributed content to Tennessee that broke that law? Mm-hmm. If they can't find out who did it, right? Or Spotify or any of these other things. And is there even a mechanism for them to police this type of content? So right now, if you have copyright infringement on your content, the way it works is like, if I take Dolly's most recent album and upload it on my YouTube channel, there's a massive library that recognizes waveforms and can say, wait, this song already exists. This is now an automated process and it will either monetize directly off of your playlist or just take it down. Yeah. Right. And so that's easy. That's fine. We can watermark audio to know what is real and what's not, but we're talking about newly created content that is done with AI based on somebody else. There's not a mechanism in place to tell if that's real or not. Right. Like maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10, maybe we come up with that solution. But as it stands today, there's not a mechanism in place where you can easily do that.
I have a feeling that there's going to be so much money involved in this that someone's going to come up with that.
Maybe until you watch Snoop Dogg today talk about how little he made after a billion streams. And so maybe the money's not there. Like, we don't really know. So it's been a wild day.
It's been a wild day. I will say this before we go to break. One of the funnest moments in my life was when the announcement came out that I was going to be a limited partner with Outlier Ventures. They made a big announcement of the new partners. And it was literally like Snoop Dogg and then me.
And so then
I'm
you?
Like, oh my gosh, I get to be next to Snoop Dogg as a limited partner for Outlier Ventures. I'm like, damn, I'm cool. My kids thought it was so cool. Anyway, on that note, let's go to break. When we get back, we'll wrap up talking about this. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Sora, courting Hollywood, with AI. I want to talk about something that I saw on Instagram from my friend Lori Siegel, who's a journalist that's been in the space for a long time, and how AI was, it was a demo, but how AI was used to ruin her life in a fictional way, but very interesting stuff. So let's go to break and we'll come back in a few seconds.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
All right, Lee. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts around all this stuff that's happening in AI? Maybe I don't know.
It's just got to go to a federal level at some point.
Yeah.
We need to get away from this state model of law and look at, and oh my goodness, I'm going to get it for this. But we really, whether the states want to admit it or not, on some level, regulation over this type of content has to be considered like as if the internet were a utility. I was a big fan of that push in 2015. Okay. We didn't win that argument. That's fine. I can move on from that. But this is kind of the hint towards an I told you so. And I'm specifically looking at Tennessee right now as they're trying to figure out what to do about AI. Because I was in Tennessee when we had that 2015 argument about treating the internet like a utility. We went with, I mean, the city of Nashville was actually kind of fighting the state. We had Marsha Blackburn, who was really supporting, you know, Comcast's role of saying, no, this is not the case. We had Chattanooga, who has municipal internet. So like all of this, and Google Fiber was trying to get into Nashville at the time, and they were fighting with Comcast. And so I was just kind of caught in the middle of all of this while it was happening and learned a ton. We didn't win that.
Yeah.
This is part of the argument for that is like, if you want enforceable regulation, you want to be able to tell where the pipes are going, someone's got to be able to look at that and make those decisions. This level of decision should probably happen on a federal level, because I don't know how one tiny little state does this. I don't.
I'm not very hopeful. I'm not very hopeful there on the federal level, but who knows? Maybe it will change.
Now, if it were California, as we're going to get into talking about AI, there is kind of like the California effect because the state is just so big.
Yeah.
That
what is it, like the fifth largest economy in the world or something like that?
It's massive,
ridiculous.
Right? And so like if California wanted to, and they probably will start enacting some state-based AI laws, which is kind of what we're getting into in this next segment, now we might have enough for it to actually make sense to go to a federal level because when it comes to this type of stuff, as California goes, so does the nation. It's like Ohio during the vote season.
So I want to move to something, you know, related, but a little bit different and still AI. I feel like every, you know, you just,
it's what it is.
It is what it is. Like, let's just go, you know, inflection, you know, everything that's happening with Microsoft and bringing the inflection CEO over to Microsoft. Very, very kind of weird news happening. Then this one's, I think, a little bit more interesting, was Stability AI, their CEO stepping down, saying that he is going to go dedicate himself to decentralized AI and how he believes that's the future. So what are your thoughts around that, around decentralized AI? And what does it even mean? Like, maybe explain.
You are so fishing right now. You are fishing in the pond. Okay, so fine. So the deal is this, and I've talked about this before. For the last couple of years, I've been working on a novel, and I've adamantly refused to talk about this novel on the show other than the fact that it was happening. The fact of the matter is the novel's based around the concept of what happens if you decentralize AI. That is the core crux of the question. And it's a science fiction novel. It takes place in 2028, so not that far into the future.
The near future,
based on the concept of what can go wrong when you start decentralizing artificial intelligence. That's as far as I'm going
to
go
No, you don't need to go any further. I don't want you to spill the tea.
But what are
your feelings around decentralized AI? Like,
it depends on what it does, right?
So who does it? Does it depend on who does it as well?
No.
Well, it's decentralized. I mean, obviously.
Right. That's kind of the problem with the concept of decentralizing AI is you lose control of it. Mm-hmm. Now we're not talking like Well, you could be looking at a Skynet style, although technically,
let's hope not.
Technically, Skynet was a closed.
One of the talks at South by Southwest had a picture of Smokey the Bear, and the slide said, "Only you can prevent Skynet." I thought that was fantastic. But yes,
in this particular case, when you start looking at the concept of decentralizing it, and so this goes into pieces of technology that came out kind of during the heyday of 2016, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain, everyone was being distracted, but the IPFS network is something I'm a massive fan of, and I'm also completely terrified of it. This is the concept of being able to take content and distribute it through a decentralized network so that it is shared by a lot of systems and then recompiled. Really nerdy, I get it, but it allows for us to ship software that is basically nothing, very lightweight, and then it compiles on load. Brilliant stuff. I geek out over it all the time. If you start adding AI to this mix, which kind of seems like what this guy's talking about, it could get hairy, because once you let that genie out of the bottle, it's just kind of out there, right? It lives in different parts of the internet on different pieces of devices that may or may not even know that it has it. And we're not talking science fiction. This is just how these type of networks function. So I don't know. It depends on what he could just be using buzzwords to say he's moving on to something else and there's nothing behind it, or this could
be money will follow him. I have a feeling billions of dollars are going to follow him.
If the money follows, the tech will grow. And that's the truth. So we'll see. And really it's kind of interesting because Stability AI has not garnered the press and attention as ChatGPT, OpenAI, or even like Bard or Gemini at Google have gotten.
Or Mistral, like some of the other players.
Yeah, so I don't know what it means for Stability. I know a lot of people in the image generation area have really kept a close eye on them, and it has a good output. But we'll see. I don't really know much past that of what's going on, but it is the first time I had seen the concept of decentralized AI in public press, and it chilled me.
So here's the other question, because I think a lot of people that listen to our podcast, they're wrapping their heads around decentralized AI. And many people hear the word decentralized and immediately they go to blockchain.
Yeah.
Right. So is there a component, a role here for blockchain? Which is something I've talked a lot about as like potentially Web3/blockchain being a great use case for proving the provenance of something created with AI.
Okay, so this is...
So let's check. What are your thoughts here on like what decentralized means? Like, is there an element here we're talking about blockchain?
The chain itself, and I don't know if it'll be like depends on what network they build, right? It will have its own, as a decentralized network is built, it has its own quote-unquote blockchain, right? It's not all necessarily the same chain. What it does do, in my opinion, is, and I hate using this term. Uh-oh. I hate it because you know me so well. It brings tokenization back into the conversation. And this is probably the only parts behind NFTs that I ever found interesting. Yeah. Like I've just always been that loudmouth angry guy who was just like, what are you doing?
I remember you're like, why do you have an ape, Kathy? Why out of all the people? I sold my ape. I'm out.
But what is interesting is this idea of building basically a manifest that says where all of these assets live, right? And this is kind of how the IPFS network, the Interplanetary File System. Yes, it is the geekiest name in the world, but it is a decentralized network for hosting. Yeah.
I like that.
It does create like this manifest where it says where all of these little shards of pieces live, and then puts a 3D object or whatever, that digital asset, could be a song, could be whatever file, back together. That is, in my opinion, how an NFT should work, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to what had happened during the last 3 years, 4 years, where a file lived on a centralized server, might be Amazon Web Space.
Yeah.
Hell, it could be a Google Drive. It didn't make any difference. And the only thing that was actually decentralized was the receipt of that, because it lived on a blockchain, because there just wasn't enough space. If you combine those two together, something at, like the IPFS network, it may be or may not be that network, and, you know, a manifest that functions like a blockchain that says, here's where all of this stuff lives. And then you tackle like AI on top of it that's actually dictating where all of these things go and what they do and how they function with code. Now you're creating something on a completely different level that I don't know of anyone who's fully like saying this part out loud, right? Like these are not the conversations that I'm hearing when I go to a conference. Mm-mm. These are not the LinkedIn posts that I scroll through and go, okay, this guy doesn't get it. This what's this person talking about? Like, this is the deeper side of it that we don't have good answers for yet.
Well, maybe it's a book. Maybe you and I have a book about this.
Well, I got a novel coming out. So.
No, but not fiction. No. I don't write fiction. I don't do well with fiction. Like, that's beyond my capacity. Nonfiction.
The thing is, I'm afraid I might be writing fiction that's not fiction.
Oh no! It's so meta. It's so meta. I don't even want to go down that way. Yeah. No. Oh no! Oh my goodness. All right. So let's move on to, I think two of the last stories I want to tackle in today's episode. OpenAI is apparently going to Hollywood and courting the Hollywood types to be able to use Sora. They're starting to kind of give access to a few directors, producers, some artists. What do you think? So here's an interesting thing I'll tell you. I had a great conversation last week and I got asked, well, do you think it's going to replace all type of video? And I said, well, right now, I don't think it has the capacity or the compute power to create a whole 2-hour movie like that. That would, the amount of compute power required to do that and for it to actually have a storyline and like everything, like a movie as we understand it, like a Scorsese movie, right? I don't think it has the capacity to do something like that. At least not yet. It doesn't have the compute power. Will it be able to create 30-second ads and commercials? In a, you know, Under Armour did something. It wasn't great necessarily, but I'm like, yeah, the 20-second, 15-second, 30-second commercial, I could see it being used for something like that. You know, yeah, it could, might create something like that. Like, I don't know, like a 2-hour, 3-hour plus full feature film. I don't think it can do that. And the capacity, like it just doesn't have the compute power to be able to do that. And weave the storylines in a way where we're used to the story being told a certain way.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's there. So like people that think that this is going to replace movies immediately are completely wrong in my perspective. 30-second ads. Yes. I could see that happen in the next, you know, year or two.
Okay. So a big part of it is this, and this is again, the boring part no one ever wants to really talk about is the traffic, right? Traffic is a problem. Pipeline is a problem. We had a show back in the early, like first 5 or 6 shows that we did where I was arguing the fact that when using ChatGPT, even as a paid subscriber, I wasn't always getting the same priority of my query, right? So I would put something in and it would give me bad information because it didn't deem it valuable enough to spend the computing power to solve. To which case, if you bribed it, it would start spending more computing power and solve your problem, you know, faster.
Motivation.
It's motivation. So there is this issue about the actual computing power it takes to generate this content. That level of computation does not live on your computer, right? I think this is where a lot of people who don't understand AI, they open up ChatGPT, they see that they can make an image. Your computer, the thing you were sitting in front of, did not make that image, right? That sent out to a server and on some remote server for what most people would call the cloud, a computer world, and spit out this image and then sent it back to you. It's why it happens in an app. It's why it happens on your phone. It's why it's got to reach out and have internet connection to do any of this stuff. You start getting into video creation and that level of content creation. It's a lot of heavy lifting. So the people that we have to listen to are not OpenAI. You have to look at the servers that are going to be running this system.
Like cloud computing companies.
It's your cloud. Now, it could be Microsoft with Azure. You know, it could be AWS. It could be, you know, Google has its own system as well. You know, and they're all trying to like solve this. But the more you bombard it with these large, heavier queries, no matter what you're paying, you are now getting in line to get a solution added. So those are the things that we don't know about Sora yet, because it's a lot of computational power that's taking them to create something like this. So you factor that in along with everyone else who's trying to make it and just trying to play with it and trying to do, you know, funny little things. Will you be able to use it in a scene? Yeah, probably. Are you making an entire movie out of it? I can't make an image right the first time, right? I have fought for like an hour with ChatGPT just to get it to spit out the image that I want to see without text written on it, right? Forget getting it to spit out text. And yes, it'll all get better in time, but I think you're being too generous with your timeline. I'm looking at like 5-10 years.
Really? For a 30-second ad? Well, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have to see. But I do think like people that are thinking that this is going to replace movies in like a year, I'm like, no, there's not enough compute power. Like even with NVIDIA's new, you know, Blackwell, whatever it's called. Like, no, guys, like seriously, let's take a step back.
Well,
quantum.
Of that aside, no, you're looking at technical resolution, and you're right in that sense. I agree with you. But as you start seeing things like what the UN adopted, it brings all of this into question. Because now there's a question of if AI is utilizing already existing data to create an output, by law, can that country's data leave its shores? Now you're getting into international data laws and regulations. It gets murky really quick. So there's just areas where a lot of this stuff is going to slow down. ChatGPT today, ChatGPT-4 today, is not as good as it was 3 months ago. It just isn't. And they will tell you that. And it's because they've had to draw things back based on laws being written, regulations, things they're being questioned about, because they don't want to go out of they don't want to be forced out of business. They don't want to be told that they have to close. So there's more at play than what can the computers handle. And this goes back to like Moore's Law. We're not necessarily following Moore's Law anymore.
Oh, no,
right?
Not anymore.
Just because the machines can doesn't mean that they do. And I'm kind of glad to see that. So do I think it'll make the impact that it will in Hollywood? I don't think so. There was a whole strike about this and they lost.
Really?
So I think that there's a lot of that in play. Will it fill in some gaps? Absolutely. I think that's where it belongs. Will it allow people to have a creative outlet to get good ideas of what a shot could look like so they can go out and create the shot? Yes.
Yes.
That makes sense. If you're in the business of making storyboards, your job's in trouble.
Yeah.
That's where I would say there's a worry to this. But at the end of the day, it makes content and it can bring ideas to life, but it doesn't necessarily make the final thing that you see. I just don't think it's going to go in that direction.
Yeah. To me, it's a question of compute power. Like, it's just not possible at this right now.
Oh yeah. Right now, especially
right now. No,
with everything being
people.
In the cloud.
Like, if you think, no.
Like, do you remember Weird Science?
I love that movie.
Okay, so there's a scene in Weird Science. This is true.
I
watched
about
it recently.
That movie forever. Weird Science.
I watched it like a week ago. I hadn't seen it since like I was a teenager, but I watched it a week ago. And there's this scene where they're in this kid's bedroom, and obviously this kid's like in 80s stupid rich, right? Because he's got a computer in his bedroom, and they're trying to make basically an artificially intelligent girl in the computer. Yes. The goal of like turning the Barbie doll into like a living being was not the end goal. They thought they could actually just talk to the computer and have a conversation with a girl so they could get better at talking with girls. Like, this is the whole premise. They get so far to the point where it can talk kind of back and forth, but not really go this far. And this is all done in a very 80s montage, John Hughes style. So I love it. And the guy just goes, we're out of power. This machine can't go any further than this. So what do? They take a telephone, they put it on a modem, and they computer hack into like DARPA or some nonsense to offload the computational power so that they can have a stronger version of artificial intelligence. This is Weird Science 1985, but that is exactly what's happening right now, right? In 2024.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Oh, I won't have to go watch it again.
Yep.
Oh my God.
It's like a 30-second clip that goes into a music 80s montage as then the lightning strikes and then like the little Barbie girl comes to life and like then you know.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, well, I remember the premise of the movie, but I'm going to have to go back
that
and watch
scene.
That scene
caught me off guard so hardcore because I was just like, "Yes, that's exactly what's going on right now."
We're not right now. I love it. So, before we wrap up, I do want to give a big shout out to Lori Segal. She's an amazing journalist. She's interviewed a lot of tech reporters, a lot of tech executives. She's been an amazing reporter at CNN. She was at 60 Minutes. I mean, just brilliant. She runs mostly human media now. And I attended her event at South by Southwest. She actually just put out some information on, it was a demo at an event here in DC with the Center for Humane Technology, where they used AI to kind of, basically they said to AI, can you create a fictional world where you can ruin Lori Segal's life? And it came up with tweets, stories, like it just did a whole world building exercise. And seeing her on stage just kind of like, just feeling ashamed of something that wasn't even her, right? But the power that this technology could have to ruin lives, ruin reputations, and, you know, beyond just like the, you know, the images of Taylor Swift, the AI images of Taylor Swift, in sexually explicit images. I think this was more about kind of how could you even use this to like ruin someone's reputation?
I saw an article like pop up today that said that there's like 4,000 celebrities who have got deepfake pornography issues right now.
Yes. A lot of them do.
Open cases.
A lot of them do. And they go through DC to try to lobby against things. Sinead Bobel, who's also a fantastic futurist, a person that I think is fascinating. She's also doing a lot of work for that. But there's a certain law that wants to, I think it's, is it AOC? I can't remember. There's someone that has a law that they want to put through to prevent deepfake porn, stuff like that. So, we'll have to see, but Lori's work, I think I want to commend her and want to include a couple links on what she experienced and how she's making sense of it and how, you know, she says even in the coverage she's done, like she's a guinea pig for a lot of this to show what could happen. But like, literally it's like the AI creates this whole story on her, having an affair with Mark Zuckerberg, which is not true. This is not real. It creates images of her, like all these sorts of things. It even used her voice to create a leaked voice message of her telling Mark that she didn't want people to know about the relationship, like the whole thing. Like it does this whole world building exercise, which was just scary AF, like super scary.
I feel like we need to end on a little bit more of a positive note because this has been a whirlwind of a show.
Like, over here.
No, it's just like, no, this is
reality check, y'all.
This is the reality check for it. So what do you do about it? Mm-hmm. What you can do right now is talk to people. You actually have to talk to people. Yeah. Don't just rely on your social media to bounce ideas and reshare and retweet, do all that stuff, but actually pick up the phone. I'm speaking to a younger generation right now. Make an actual phone call, talk to people, because these type of things are starting to boil into AI created scams. And so like you just having dialogue with people and communicating and growing a community that is not necessarily only online is such a paramount, I think, necessity for the survival of our sanity at this point. You know, Kathy, you and I do a lot of our corresponding online, but we have a phone call where I actually hear you on the phone, right? Like
you're in my favorites list. I don't know if you knew that. Because we talked so much. It was like favorites. Okay. One of my favorite
I think that's the part that's missing. And don't freak out about it. Get involved. Like one, educate by reading the bills that are getting passed. That is something that I learned years ago. It's real easy to just get freaked out and think this headline said this, so it means this. Chances are whoever read that headline, if it's even a person, didn't actually read the bill. Go read the bills, calm yourself down. Find the holes, find the gaps, and then go talk to your representatives and say, have you thought about this? Because they're available for those conversations. The article I wrote on LinkedIn led to conversations with people who are in the legal process in the state of Tennessee when I wrote about the Elvis Act. Everybody has a perspective and a voice. Start utilizing it, you know, and I think it'll be fine. I do.
I hope so.
I have to think it'll be fine.
All right. Well, Lee, thank you for another great episode. I mean, I feel like the episodes just keep getting, like, the conversation just keeps getting deeper, more, you know, I don't know. This is really good. I'm excited. This has been a good podcast. So
I love it.
A little Debbie Downer-ish, but hey, we're good. We're good. So, all right. Well, thanks to everyone for listening to Tech Magic. Come for the tech, stay for the magic. We are always thrilled for you to join us. And we'll be back next week.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.